You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where there was a time above, a time before. There were perfect things, diamond absolutes. Then there was Batman's penis. I'm your host, Justin Obozeski, and if you get both those references or neither, then you belong in the midside. And you know who else belongs in the midside? Jonathan Honig, a founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and a regular contributor and panelist in Fox News. You know how I know? Because he will be joining us here today on this episode to discuss his new book, A New Textbook of Americanism. But first, joining me this trip from our nation's capital, making his triumphant return, Daniel T. Richards.
It won't be that triumphant. I mean, the parade shouldn't last that long. Like a couple routes, couple streets, 2-3 marching bands afloat, some balloons, cheerleaders, the little go-kart people wearing the fez hats. That's enough, though. That's all.
So basically a Super Bowl victory parade.
I mean, I'm not going to stop you if you've already had it planned.
I figured your triumphant return would just be winning like 6 games in a row and then tearing your ACL.
Yes. Talking of the great Jimmy G, who looks like he's out this season. Football talk, Midsider Mark. Did you miss me?
Well, this is for all the people who are missing Belichick Your Premises because we've been unable to get on a schedule right now. So we'll try and get some of those episodes out. But we are recording this on a Sunday midday, so football's on the brain. And I know football is on our next guest or host's brain because his team won by scoring like 56 points, I believe. Joining me from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, big big victory, I guess you can call it that. But more important than that, I'm glad Daniel's back because not only am I ready to host the parade because I actually have a fez. I went to San Pedro to the Moroccan restaurant yesterday and they gave out free fez hats, so I have a fez. But we have so much Kavanaugh to talk about, so I don't know what could draw Daniel back more than Supreme Court discussions.
Also, before we get into that, you are, although you're forgoing your privilege, you are still, you know, on the inside a little bit gay, which makes you phenomenal at parades.
I was going to say the same thing. We go all this way to be like, you're not gay, and then you're like, a parade? Yay!
Isn't it Adam Carolla who says that more than 3 gays in any room is considered a parade of gays?
All right, well, to lower the gay quotient on the show and do some things a little positive before we get to the Kavanaugh news, I want to challenge you all. And what I want to challenge you about is I want you to convince me that the following is not The Rock's campaign platform for when he runs for president.
This is bringing down the gay in the room?
Fair enough, but this is from his, I looked at underarmor.com because he just released like some new shoes and paraphernalia merchandise through his Under Armour line. And on it, this is written about Project Rock. Project Rock is not a brand. It's a movement. It's a core belief that I 100% don't care what color you are, how old you are, where you come from, or what you do for a living. The only thing I care about is you and me building the belief that regardless of whatever the odds, we can overcome and achieve. But it all starts with the work we're willing to put in with our own two hands. Convince me, Daniel and William, that that is not his campaign platform.
Well, here's my start, which is if it is his campaign platform, he won't be running as a Democrat, because that is not a Democrat slogan. We're going to put in work. with our own two hands? Oh, no, no, sir. What we can build together, regardless of whatever the odds, we can overcome and achieve? Oh, no, no. That goes against decades of Democratic platform rhetoric, which is, you're being held down by the man, i.e. the white old man, and only I, the benevolent Democrat, can vote you some of their sustenance to keep you living just a little bit longer so you can vote for us again. So if that is his campaign platform, he's either going to be running as an independent or even, dare I say, a libertarian.
I agree completely. There's precedent with that, with former pro wrestler, and I believe he was governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, running as a libertarian.
Yes. And no, this... independent, right?
Yeah, I think he was independent. Yeah,
I think he ran as an independent.
Well, his politics were very libertarian, I believe.
More so than, yes, but he ran as an independent. Okay, libertarians have not had any success in any way whatsoever. Let's not get their hopes up.
Okay, getting your hopes up. Sorry, liberty.me.
Yeah,
although
sorry.
I will say, Daniel, with what you're saying, I don't think he could run Republican, but this reminds me of Ronald Reagan, very much so.
Yeah, he's too ethnic to run Republican, but yeah.
Well, and he's also too much into meritocracy to run as a Democrat. So, I mean, we all know meritocracy is just another sign of white oppression. So, you know, your own two hands, put in your individual effort and get rewards. Oh, hell no, we can't have that.
Now, you're sure, Justin, not Under Armour, but underarmbutter.com that you got this from?
Yes, I'm 100% sure.
Oh, okay.
Daniel, thank you for that.
That was an awesome dad joke.
Yes, it was.
You've been saving that up for 2 weeks. That's why I'm shaking my head over here. You've been saving that up for 2 weeks.
This is what you're missing out on, folks.
But to finish this up and round into the news here, I just want to say that him running as an independent would actually be the best rhetorical move, because he could say both parties have failed us. It's time to go in a new direction. The direction of Project Rock. And if you notice, the first half of the statement is very much trying to appeal to the progressive left base, right? Being colorblind, so on and so forth. And then it goes into, as you said, appealing to the right base. So I do think that running as an independent would be the best thing for him. And I see he's clearly trying to appeal to all political sides with this.
He could. If there's anyone who can do better than Ross Perot, it's probably The Rock, but remember that Ross Perot, all he achieved was a Bill Clinton presidency. So,
all right then. And speaking of not really knowing what's going on and what's going to happen and achieving things you don't realize you're going to achieve, it's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. Isn't just a fad.
What a week in the swamp. Not only the swamp of DC, but the swamp of social justice America. The news section this week could be a complete stand-in section for Woker Joke, but unfortunately for us, it is all woke. The National Review and other...
By the way, speaking of that, Daniel, it was really hard for me not to do a sexual title for this week's episode, like something like the Batman's Penis Edition or something even more vulgar. But because Jonathan Honig is going to be on this episode, I didn't want to be so vulgar for a possible marketing piece for us.
Oh, so you'll be not vulgar for Jonathan Honig, but not for one of your co-hosts who repeatedly asks you to turn down the vulgarity.
You didn't say I had to.
Okay, I see where I land in this relationship, right below Jonathan Honig. Okay.
Excellent. Yes, right below him. I mean, he is a capitalist pig. What are you, Mexican?
Oh, how dare you? How dare? Oh,
only half.
How dare you?
Only half.
How dare you? How dare you? You racist. Okay. So the National Review and other outlets are reporting that the third named witness from the Christine Blasey Ford accusation against Judge Kavanaugh has rejected her allegations against the judge. Oh boy. In a written testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee, a third named witness has rejected the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh. Having been asked by a Senate staffer to comment on the charges advanced against the nominee, a lawyer for Leland Ingham Kaiser, oh, there were more names. Not used to three named people, these three named people in this story. Leland Ingham Kaiser wrote, quote, simply put, Miss Kaiser does not know Mr. Kavanaugh, and she has no recollection of ever being at a party or gathering where he was present with or without Dr. Ford. Of course, it is a criminal penalty to lie to the Senate Judiciary Committee, so that ups the stakes a bit. Ms. Kaiser, whom CNN confirms is a lifelong friend of Ford's, is the third named witness to deny any knowledge of the allegations. The other two, Mark Judge and Patrick Smith, issued written statements to the effect earlier this week. Thus far, no one has backed up the account advanced by Kavanaugh's accuser, while Kavanaugh and three other named witnesses have rejected it outright. Now, Justin, I haven't been on to talk about this Kavanaugh stuff, so I don't know where you stand or William stands on it, because I also don't listen to the podcast. But
jerk.
Doesn't this seem like nail in the coffin kind of material for the accusation, where the three people plus the accuser, plus the accused all say this didn't happen, or they have no knowledge of this happening at all? Wouldn't this, under any normal circumstance, be the end of this?
You mean any normal circumstance where we don't live in a country that hates men and just decides all men are rapists?
Right. Any normal circumstance of almost any period of history. Like, wouldn't this just be, certainly in a criminal case, this would be really hard to overcome, would it not?
Well, yeah, I agree completely. But before I get to that, I just want to say, I've never seen a story associated with DC with so many three named people without an assassination or an assassination attempt on the president.
You know, that's probably because of the, this is so long ago, it's probably because they keep having to use the maiden names, because otherwise it won't make sense to anyone, right?
That's true. That's
touché.
True.
Touche. I thought all these people are so feminist that they wouldn't have, oh, that's why they have three names. Never mind. That was dumb. But yeah, this is the thing, right? When this comes out and they say, now there's a third witness who's denying this completely. And remember, Kavanaugh denied this unequivocally, right? This isn't like Devin Farsi, where it came out like, oh yeah, he drunkenly did all these things to women. He's like, I don't remember them, but if I did, I'm sorry. Kavanaugh was like, no, I didn't do this. This is ridiculous. That's it. Just flat out plain 100% denial. So couple that with the fact that everyone else is denying it. And I have to even go back and say the claim that, remember the original claim, Daniel, was that the letter had been written well before the hearings even started?
Yeah.
I have to even question that claim. I really have to question if this is just a political move by the left in the Me Too era, where all you have to do is sneeze in the direction of a guy, and the sneeze sounds like the word rape, and the person gets fired, and they lose their entire life. I mean, remember what happened to Chris Hardwick, and then he was completely exonerated?
Yeah, Gesundheit.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's the thing. Like, there's two things. One, is the letter even real, or was it just at the end where they needed a Hail Mary, basically? This is Aaron Rodgers in the fourth quarter just trying to make something happen. They claim he's the best quarterback, and he deserves to win. They claim Kavanaugh doesn't deserve to be judged, so they need to find a way for him to win somehow. So they come up with this. And then two, assuming the letter, let's say the letter even is real, okay? I'll give them that premise. The letter's real. Is this Ford lady even the one who wrote it? Or is she just like, oh, well, you know, if they have a face to the accusations, to the accuser, then it's going to make it more empathetic and they're more willing to get rid of him. It creates this, we've created this society in this culture where one woman, if you know, even if she wrote it or if she didn't write it and just put her face and name to it, one woman can hijack the entire government, the entire culture. That's fucking terrifying.
It is terrifying. I'm not so conspiracy theory about it. Not that you're being totally conspiratorial. There's some evidence to suggest that social justice warriors will lie to get what they want.
Let's not forget Mattress Girl, right? Let's not forget Mattress Girl here. This isn't unheard of.
Yes.
I just don't understand the word some. I think there is all the evidence that social justice warriors will lie to get what they want. Social justice warriors always lie. Social justice warriors always project. Look at the books by Vox Day. He writes books about that, and it talks about the rules of social justice warriors.
Yeah.
I'm going to push back hard on the use of the word some.
Let's say the preponderance of evidence might suggest that will lie to get what they want. William, we talk about on this show.
All the evidence.
We have talked about before what a response from someone who is innocent would look like. And I have always said that the response from someone who's innocent should look like basically what Kavanaugh's response has been, which is unequivocally no. Absolutely not, under no circumstances, and in fact, I'm a little angry about this. So does that to you, William, suggest that, or is there something else that might suggest that Kavanaugh is telling the truth?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't know what's true and what's not about this story in general, and then even specific details, it's hard to verify any of them, because of this media frenzy and this reporting frenzy. One thing I saw, and Daniel, I'll have to ask you if this is even true, is that this accusation didn't even get made until 2012. And I've seen conflicting reports on that even. And
so, yeah, the first time this incident came up to anyone was 2012, when Christine Ford, Dr. Ford, told her therapist about this incident. Now, she never said Kavanaugh's name in the therapy session, or at least the therapist never wrote it down. And in fact, the incident the therapist wrote down said there were four men in the room, when Christine Ford now says there were only two. And that's the first time it came up. Now, this is getting a little conspiratorial, but that was approximately the time when Mitt Romney was looking like he was going to win the presidency, and Kavanaugh's name was number one on the list for the Supreme Court. So there's some interesting correlations there. But yeah, I agree with you, William, that this story has been made harder to follow by so-called journalists. Wait, that's right. I called them so-called journalists.
Yeah, because they're not journalists.
They're horrible at their job if they're actually journalists, because their job is supposed to be to decipher facts from fiction, and all they've done is obfuscate and make the facts harder to determine in this case. So thanks, journalists. Thanks, media. No wonder Trump can rile up his base to hate on you people.
Okay.
You can go in a second. I just have two quick questions. One, when was Mitt Romney ever close to winning the presidency? Did I fall asleep? Like,
there was a little bit of time there, right around when this accusation was made, when in the polls he was winning and it looked like he was on the upswing and he may actually win. Remember that going into the election, Mitt Romney on election day was told by his campaign staff that he was basically going to win because the polls looked like he had a great chance. And then he got decimated, but, you know.
Yeah, you think we would have learned about the polls then. Okay.
Yeah.
My second question is, were all four men in the room in that story by Ford, were they all future high-powered Republicans?
We may never know, but it is possible. I like what you're getting at there. So,
go ahead, William. Sorry.
Yeah, let's bring some sanity
back to the show, please.
Yeah, well, let's turn this completely around. Let's say everything she says happened, and that she just happens to not have any corroborating evidence because it's 35 years later, 36 years later, however many years later. What are we to do about that? That's the other thing that really bothers me, because there's no way to have this without saying some really uncomfortable things, right? Like if someone did something to me as a child, I would certainly want justice. But objectively, is it even possible this long after the fact with no evidence to get that justice?
So it's a good thought experiment to essentially assume she's telling the truth, but cannot prove that she's telling the truth. We have in this country, in the criminal sense, a presumption of innocence, by the way, innocent until proven guilty. And there's a reason for that, because it's precisely what's going on now, which is that the presumption of guilt can destroy people's lives, especially when we can't prove it. The presumption of guilt can stop people from having careers. They can stop people from advancing. It can stop people from all sorts of things. So we presume innocence. Even in the most heinous cases, we presume innocence until the evidence suggests otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, OJ is still walking around free.
Yeah, I think there's a deeper philosophical question here, and I'm actually a little disappointed in some of the hot takes from certain objectivists on this. Right now, as this stands, this claim by her is completely arbitrary. There is nothing, no facts to back it up. There's not a specific date or time or location. It's just completely arbitrary. It's just an arbitrary statement.
There's not another witness to put him anywhere near her. There's nothing.
And what you're saying is it's a lie.
No, because that's what I'm trying to get at. Even if it's completely true, you shouldn't be angry or malign people who are very skeptical. Right now, it's a completely arbitrary statement, and it seems really scary to be taking this completely arbitrary statement as something that should, you know, destroy someone's career. Now, if Kavanaugh is a abuser like this, it's certainly probable that we would have other folks that he abused, right? We see that pattern of behavior. Look at Bill Cosby. It wasn't necessarily, you know, it was arbitrary when one person was accusing Bill Cosby, but then when all these other people came out and they all had, corroborating evidence, it was like very overwhelming, right? Like it became like, oh, this is not arbitrary anymore. It's not just an arbitrary accusation. There's a pattern here, and we've got some facts that kind of integrate with it. And yeah, we need to investigate this. We need to, you know, bring this up in criminal sense and all those other things. But right now, like it's just completely arbitrary. And and I would say this, if this is true, I feel terrible for this Ford character, right? Like if this is true, this is a tragedy. And if it's not true, but she believes it's true, it's even more of a tragedy.
It depends. So, okay, we get into some really potentially controversial area now. So let's tread lightly. And I'm mostly saying that out loud to myself because I would like to have a career.
Are you sure that's not directed directly at me?
I would like to have a career in the future post this podcast. So there are a couple things. So there are like three. Look at like the three potential realities here, right? So there is only one, but we don't know it. So there are three potentials. This didn't happen, and she's lying about it. This was a one-time drunken mistake by Kavanaugh, and he's lying about it. Or he's some sort of serial abuser, and we don't have the evidence to suggest that yet. I'm not so sure, William, that this is a tragedy if it was a one-time thing that was a drunken behavior that, you know, that he's never repeated again, apparently, since he's had 37 years and now hundreds of women come out and say that he's always treated them with respect, etc. And in fact, there was a CNN panel. I don't know if any of you saw this. They haven't re-aired it, as far as I know. It was a live panel with five women that CNN chose, and the CNN reporter was a woman, and they basically asked these five women, like, what you think about the accusation against Kavanaugh and assume it's true. And all five women unanimously said they basically don't care. All five women, I mean, they were different degrees of not care, but some of them said, like, she needs to get over it. Some said this is kids being kids. Some said, this is a big nothing burger. Some thought she was lying. But the point is, I don't think there's a large group of people in this country that think that even if this was true, that this disqualifies him from the Supreme Court. I'm not making that claim quite yet, but I'm curious what you think about it.
I'll take the hit on this one. Okay, ready? I'm about to torpedo my entire life right now, okay? Based upon what you just said, those women said, I am now even more comfortable saying what I was thinking, and it has to do with number two. When you said, not like a German, like, what is it, Scheiße porn?
Scheiße video?
Yes. Yeah, not that kind of video. Not that number
not
two.
Not that kind of number two.
Not that kind of number two. The situation number two, you said. The situation number two was that it was a drunken mistake. I want to key in on the word mistake, because people could hear that and think that implies he mistakenly tried to sexually assault her. He mistakenly tried to rape her. What if this is with, you know, kids being kids and kids making mistakes. What if this is an issue of youth not understanding sexuality completely yet? What if this is an issue of not understanding female resistance? And what I mean by that is one of the hardest things to understand in our culture nowadays. It's incredibly hard to understand on its own. But in our culture of no means no, is real female resistance versus faux female resistance. And what I mean by that is part of the pursuit is women will pretend to resist and pretend to be disinterested, like playing hard to get. That applies physically as well. What if this was a situation where he thought that's what was happening, so he kept pushing forward because that's what he was used to, and then when he realized it wasn't, she was able to run out of the room? Because let me ask you this. The situation is he was supposedly on top of her or something, and he was trying to assault her, and then he got distracted and she ran away.
If close. He's really trying, the third party, this the other guy was in the room, jumped on the bed with them, and then she got away, but it's unclear.
Okay, and that's my point. If he's in the room and he's trying to rape her, like legitimately trying to rape her, and the other dude is in there, he knows what's going on, and then if he's jumping on the bed, he knows what's going on, she's not getting away from two young men who are intent on raping her at that point. So something doesn't add up, and to me what doesn't add up is this may just be a situation, even if this happened, which, as we know, I'm not convinced that this happened at all, and this isn't just all made up to, you know, like, oh my God, there is a pubic hair on the Coke can. There's a pubic hair on the Coke can. We can't make the first black, not the first, but we can't make the first black Republican Supreme Court justice ever because there's a pubic hair on the Coke can. This is the new pubic hair on the Coke can. I'm not convinced this isn't a lie, but even if this wasn't, you could see how this could be a drunken mistake of someone who just hasn't learned enough and is literally just a 17-year-old boy who made a stupid fucking mistake. And it would be a stupid mistake. It would be. You shouldn't be trying to get intimate with someone who you haven't had a lot of go signals from and you haven't had a lot of connection with prior. That is part of our whole drink. You know, I'm straight edge. This becomes a mistake that's part of our whole drinking culture, our whole hookup culture, where you just go to a party, get drunk, and have sex with someone you've never met before. You put that level of trust in someone. So there's a number of really terrible, immature, self-hating mistakes here. But that is a far cry from saying someone is intent on raping someone and it was attempted sexual assault.
Yeah, it's well, first of all, it was nice knowing you. You had a good career, but it's over now.
I didn't even say anything that crazy. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
Yep. Career
but,
over.
You know, career done. Done! Fork in it. But, you know, her letter says something like, to the effect of like, this isn't a quote, but it's a paraphrase. Like, I'm afraid if he hadn't been drunk, he would have successfully raped me. And it's like, well, it depends on how you're viewing that, right? Like, in cases where if it's fueled by drunkenness, then if he's less drunk, he's not going to do it, right? It's not like it's not like in those incidents you get more clear-headed and decide, yeah, I would actually like to rape her. I mean, I'm sure that does happen, but I don't know. To me, the thing seems entirely politically calculated. The way it was done seems entirely politically calculated. The fact that they've asked for so many delays and so many conditions that all come out to be totally politically calculated, to me does not indicate that this is someone who's interested in getting at the truth, someone who's interested in simply letting the public know about a bad thing that someone did when they were 17. This, to me, is someone, whether they're telling the truth or not, who is out to tarnish the reputation of a man who is otherwise led an upstanding, moral, intellectual, academic life. A guy who I will say that I know somewhat. We're not best friends, but I've met him on numerous occasions, and he's always impressed me with how incredibly kind he is, how willing he is to talk to anyone about anything at any time. I met him once out. He was having a beer and eating barbecue at Hill Country Barbecue in D.C., and I walked up to him and told him I thought his work on the D.C. circuit was excellent, and we had a chat about it, and he was cordial and inviting and warm. And there's no evidence to me that it suggests anything else from his 37-year career since this incident, you know, allegedly happened. So
not only, Daniel, did you just get yourself invited to Midside Tent City with all those statements, you just got the owners and operators of Hillside City Grill.
Country Barbecue, let's be clear.
Okay, Hill Country Barbecue, whatever their name is. Hillside City Country Barbecue Grill. They will now be joining us in Midside Tent City as well. So Midside Tent City population is growing. If you want to reserve a spot today, send money to my email address at paypal.com because I'm soon going to be poor.
Well, just to wrap a bow,
than I already am.
Just to wrap a bow on this before we leave the Kavanaugh story. The last thing I heard was that they were negotiating for her to go first in the testimony so that Kavanaugh would not have a chance to respond. And if anything illustrates the point you're making, Daniel, it's exactly that.
Yeah. It is interesting that we don't have the details about her testimony yet, but she has asked for a lot of things that seem politically motivated. One of which is that the Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee were wanting to bring in an independent counsel to question her, a female independent counsel. And their argument was this would be a more sensitive way of doing it. And her lawyer does not want that to happen. Now, why do you think her lawyer doesn't want that to happen, Justin?
Because gender doesn't matter, and they're specifying gender.
Oh, no, gender does matter very much in this case.
It's because she's lying.
It's because the optics are better for her if it's a panel of 11 Republican men questioning her, not one female independent attorney.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's the, you know, whether she goes first or second question. There was the timing question. She said their decision to want her to testify on Monday was arbitrary. Arbitrary? The whole thing is arbitrary. So now she's going to testify on Thursday. You know,
I mean, that's pretty consistent with government, though. Like, hey, here's something we could do on Monday and get this issue taken care of, but we're going to push it to Thursday. That's pretty consistent with government.
Well, it's just because she kept asking for delays and delays and delays, and the chairman of the committee, Senator Grassley, has been more than accommodating. And the whole thing has been a circus. You know, the Democrats at first, when they didn't think the Republicans would allow her to testify, saying it was a travesty that her story wouldn't be heard. And then when Grassley invited her to testify, saying, hey, stop bullying her into testifying. So the whole thing is nuts. If Kavanaugh, who is by all accounts the most qualified candidate perhaps ever for the Supreme Court, if his nomination is derailed by an arbitrary claim that cannot be backed up by any evidence from when he was in high school, it is, I think, as Robert Bork once said, the downfall of civilization. So you can look up that reference sometime if you're interested. All right, moving on to more, I don't know, absurdity.
The sex.
Yeah, sex.
There we go.
Women saying absurd things about sex, Daniel.
There we go. That's a transition for you right there. That's why you pay us the big bucks. Podcast hosts of the podcast Guys We Effed are being called racist.
The podcast name is Guys We Fucked, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not going to say that. For a clip of them talking about sex with black men from 2014. On a weekly podcast, this is from BuzzFeed.news or something, I don't know. On the weekly podcast, which reportedly has more than 1 million subscribers, comedians Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson discuss their sex lives and interview men they've slept with. The self-declared anti-slut-shaming podcast has been lauded as feminist for its sex positivity. But on Monday, blogger Dami Olenissakin tweeted that she was really disappointed with a sex podcast because she heard them talking about black men as sexual objects that they can tick off their bucket list for their own sexual gratification. Then a clip emerged, Fisher and Hutchinson discussing having sex with black men and complaining about black people who act like white people. So this is an extended quote, which will be taken out of context in the future, I'm sure. dropped into a commercial from one of my political campaigns. Quote, I had sex with two dudes, and one was the black guy, Fisher said in the clip, prompting Hutchison to respond with a gasp and score. It was my second black guy, though, Fisher continued. Everyone was like, oh, is that your first black guy? And I'm like, excuse me, I've been effing black guys since the early 2000s, thank you very much. Yeah, but you even said your first one didn't count, Hutchison replied. But this was like a real black guy, she continues, like a basketball player height, deep voice, lives uptown. He doesn't act black enough, though. So Twitter was, as you might expect, Twitter, with people crying racism, saying that this is objectification of black men, sexualization of black men, saying it was hard to listen to, saying this is outright racism, etc., etc., etc. The show hosts have since apologized, of course, and said that they are listening to people in the culture about how they should act in the future and trying to erase insensitive dialogue from their conversation. So, Justin, racist? Not racist? What do you think about
that? That's not the right question to ask. The right question to ask, I know you're just coming back from a week, 2 weeks off. The right question to ask is, Justin, is your girlfriend Asian enough?
My girlfriend is actually 13% white, so fuck off with that right now.
That's a better question, Frank.
Thank you.
That is a better question. I appreciate that. But I'm going to sidestep both those questions. I'm actually going to get to the initial question in a second. But I want to say that the reason this whole thing is absurd is it gets to the root of the hypocrisy and the irony of the entire social justice movement. These people are all outraged that the hosts of a show called Guys We Fucked, where they discuss their sexual exploits, said something racist. That's what they're upset about.
Touche, salesman.
Yeah, this is completely racist because it's completely collectivist. This reveals at the root of racism is collectivism. What makes someone black enough? What makes someone, William, Asian enough? What makes someone anything enough?
I've been accused of not being gay enough.
Yeah. Right, because you're not acting as whatever the collectivized identity of gay is. Isn't gay just you're attracted to other men? Isn't that just what gay means?
Does it even How dare mean? You? Someone can be gay and like women if they want to.
Okay, well, see, this is what I'm getting at right now. It's fucking ridiculous. Like, all of these labels only matter for just communicating with other people, for understanding. It's like if you go, I'm talking about Tom. Well, which Tom? Two Toms are standing next to each other. The black one. And then everyone's like, oh my God, you're racist. Like, that's the only time it matters to say someone's black or not. That's it. 100%. Then you judge Tom individually. You don't go, oh, like, oh, well, one guy's a dick and one guy's not. And you know, which one's mean Tom? And you go, oh, well, white Tom is mean Tom. No, you can't judge that by race. But the problem is we've convinced people that they are a certain way based upon their race. And so people have internalized these collectivized identities. So when someone says something like this, they all personalize it. So it becomes this whole fucked up cycle of internalized and externalized collectivism.
Yeah. It just occurs to me that one way to think about it from a communication standpoint, Justin, from a rhetorical standpoint, is that we're in a culture now that so wants to reject reality that to them all description is prescription. So by naming something, by identifying something, you are putting a judgment on that thing, a value judgment on that thing. So to say that someone is black is to put a value judgment on that thing.
Agree 100%. Person. That's because
not black people are not things, they're people.
Right. Since nice, good caveat. I appreciate you just saving yourself right there.
Thank you.
But that's because since the time we've been taught, when young, we've been taught relativism and we've been taught social constructionism. The idea that we construct reality with our minds and what we believe it to be, so our words construct reality. We're not taught that. Our words are used to identify and name things that we perceive. We're taught that our our minds and our words are used to create the things we perceive. It's completely ass backwards. It's completely retarded. And going back to the first story, that's what we end up with.
Yeah. It's her truth. We should believe her truth.
Justin. I think there's another irony, Justin, that kind of integrates with what you're talking about. And that is, we're told by the social justice crew that there is a racial black identity, that there is a racial black culture, right? In a lot of ways, right? We're taught that there's a cultural element there that is somehow tied to race, right?
Because otherwise we couldn't appropriate it.
Right. So we're taught that. And then now they're calling this person, these folks out for fetishizing or objectifying it. And, you know, I want to get more into the I'm pro objectification, but that's a different a secondary topic. But here
I'm pro objectification.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah, but if we're gonna call them out for fetishizing it and saying that they're the ones fetishizing it, it's like, well, why is this even a thing? Like, you know, like I mean, on the internet, there's a fetish for everything, right? So if someone is really into tall basketball playing black skinned guys, then, you know, more power to you. It has nothing to do with any moral judgments necessarily, right? Like, if that's your fetish, that's your fetish, and that's a whole different sort of discussion to go down. But to say that it's their fault that there's people who have this fetish is really weird, because the whole point of social justice is to say that this is a unique thing that's being stolen and oppressed, and, well, then people are going to fetishize it.
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite quotes, by the way, from one of the critics from @absurdistwords, saying, "This is what not racism sounds like among white people when they think there's no black people in earshot." It was sent to a wildly successful podcast. They think no one's ever going to hear it? They're comedians, which is the sort of secondary element of this all, the meta element of this all that makes me want to scream, which is, we're going after comedians. Comedians! Their job is to make fun. Their job is to insult. Their job is to tear down. Their job is to show absurdity, be absurd, etc., 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 to the nth degree. They're comedians. They're terrible comedians, but they are comedians nonetheless.
Do you know why they're terrible comedians, Daniel?
Because their jokes are terrible?
Because they're women.
So the last thing I...
Thank you.
I don't know if you guys just heard, my girlfriend was just like, that's fucked up. No, Dave, you're exactly right. I mean, that's the joke I'm making, and you fucking undercut my joke from the beginning with, no, it's because they make terrible jokes. Like, that's why no one can tell if they're joking.
Yeah. But to me, it's like, look, go after politicians, go after businessmen if you're going to, social justice idiots. But cheesy Pete's, can we please leave the comedians alone? My God.
There are more important people and higher upstanding people who are more moral to attack over shit than the people who talk about who they fucked on a podcast, okay? Moving on.
That's right. Moving on to whether or not puppets are gay. Are Bert and Ernie gay?
It gets worse, by the way, when we go to the last transition.
No, it's only downhill from here, which is sad. Now the link you sent me, Justin, by the way, for this story, no longer works. It just takes me to a paywall.
Just Google headline and click on it.
We can get the... But that only works on my phone, William. That's the problem.
Wait, look, there's a story where the writer of Bert and Ernie said that he wrote it like his gay relationship, and then Sesame Street said they're not gay, and now people are like, why aren't they gay? And Sesame Street was just like, they're puppets. Puppets don't have sexuality. That's a story, right, Daniel?
Yeah. Thoughts?
Is there anything else you would like to add to that summary of the story?
The opinion piece here from the Wall Street Journal basically says, like, do we have to inject politics into everything, even puppets? Like, do we have to Marxist analyze everything? Like, for instance, like Elmo's parents, one is red and one is blue. So does that mean it's a commentary on interracial relationships? Like, sometimes puppets are just puppets. Why do we have to read into this? So that's
that
part
means Elmo's mother is a cheating whore, assuming she's the blue one. Or the red one.
Actually, it's funny. It's funny that was the example, because I almost sent you guys on Discord a picture at I stayed at the Disney Yacht Club, and they had the mannequins set up right with different, you know, shirts and hats and bags you can buy in the shop there at the Yacht Club, and they had the most awkward interracial couple and family ever in the display. It was like a black or maybe Middle Eastern dude, like an Asian, like mother, Hispanic, like child, and then like some very white other child. So it was just like you're looking at that and thinking, like, the first thing I looked at, I was like, wow, the milkman was very busy here. This is a lot of adopted children or something. I don't know what's going on here.
Well, that's when the government will apportion what race and gender of a child you get based upon the statistics of your community and your family tree.
That's right. That's right. We look forward to that day.
Well, yeah, I think
for like in vitro.
I think the discussion around this whole Bert and Ernie thing is like fascinating in the sense of like social justice eating itself. But there's a couple of good issues that it kind of brings up. And the first one that came to my mind is like, you know, can two dudes have a close, intimate, but not sexual relationship? You know, like that's
not in 2018. Like,
yeah, exactly. Not in 2018, which, since most of my
William, the movie I Love You Man with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, right? So we had movies like Superbad, which was all about the close male friendship between Jonah Hill and George Michael. Well, his name's escaping me at this moment.
Michael Cera.
And that was all fine. That was completely fine, right? It was just, they were just two dudes who were close with each other. But then we started creating this term bromance. And then anytime any male expresses admiration for their team's greatest quarterback of all time, he's called gay.
Hey, it goes back to Lord of the Rings and Sam and Frodo. I mean, how many times did we have to hear that? Oh, that's super awkward. They're gay for each other. And it's like, no, that's like, if you've had that kind of deep male bond with another male, like that's something very special, and it has nothing to do with sex. And the gays are very guilty.
They go out of their way to sexualize that relationship and give it these weird, it's like a rom-com for a male friendship. And when you do that, Hollywood is sending the message, the media is sending the message of the sexualization you're talking about.
Yeah, the gay intelligentsia really want, they really cling on to those sort of things and try to make them sexual, which is really strange. And the other thing to break up,
that's because they want to fuck Tom Brady, not me. They want to.
And the other thing is, this does touch on the whole I guess stereotype or whatever you want to call it, with involving gay men and children and never being trusted, right? There's a lot of, you do see some of that come out in this, like, well, if they were gay, like, it would be a huge deal because, you know, you can't trust gays around children. And so it does kind of touch that nerve a little bit for some people, but I don't we've been discussing it. It's not like they are just puppets. They're there to teach about friendship, and that's all they've ever been. And to read all this extra stuff into it is to just confuse the issue. Do you think any 4-year-old or 6-year-old that's watching is worried about who's like shtipping who on Sesame Street?
Like, exactly. If you take this down the rabbit hole of social justice, and it's like, what does it mean for them to be gay? Like, does it mean, like, you know, in between scenes, the puppets are, well, you know what gay people do, right, William? Like, what would it actually mean for the puppets to be gay? What would it mean for them to be gay in the context of Sesame Street? What is it? There is no sexuality, period, within the context. Who cares? Well, it's nothingness.
I think to be gay as a puppet means put the other puppets.
Nope, don't. What would it mean for them to be straight in the context of Sesame Street? That they're hooking up with other puppets on the weekend? Like they're dating the yip things or whatever? Like,
well, I mean, if
because they're the only puppets that can means, yeah. consent. Yeah. So what would it mean for them to have sexuality, period, within the context of Sesame Street? The social justice warriors are doing this purely as propaganda and the worst kind of propaganda, which is propaganda toward children. So stop it. Speaking of things to stop, a headline I thought I'd never have to read on the show. Reports of Batman's penis have been greatly overhyped. Woke. Yes. Okay. This is a story that went a little bit viral this week because Batman Damned number one launched from storytellers Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo, if that means anything to anyone. In the lead up to the release, the comics community was buzzing over one major element of the issue, the full frontal nudity. Full frontal bat nudity. So this writer says, quote, "I spent a whole weekend watching people on my Twitter timeline tweet obliquely about Batman's penis, which I only referred to as Batman's penis, not his dick, so as to avoid confusion with his adopted ward, Dick Grayson," which is the best line in this entire article. "Without a moment to sit down and read Batman Damned myself. Possibly I could have on Someday, etc., 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 but he was sitting next to an old woman he didn't want to." So case, so the whole thing leads up to him finally reading the magazine, getting to the end of it, only to learn, like, "I didn't actually see it. Where was it?" And him going back to look for Batman's penis and basically saying, "It's on a page. You can kind of see it, but if you weren't looking for it, you wouldn't see it." And I guess we'll share this picture, Justin, on themidside.com in case anyone hasn't...
It's in the article, correct?
Yes, hasn't seen it.
So you link all news stories that we read are linked to on themidside.com/podcast or themidside.com. So you can read any news story to figure out what's going on.
If you do figure out what's going on, please let us know. We'd really like to be in on it. But so I don't know, Justin. I guess I'll throw this over to you. Were you, impressed by his member? Because I couldn't actually, see it. Maybe I'm blind. I do have horrible eyes.
No, what is so absurd to me about this story is that if you look at it, not the member, the panels. If you look at the panels, somebody had an opportunity to draw Batman's penis twice, and they were so fucking lazy that they just repeated the same panel the second time with different dialogue. If you have the opportunity to draw the definitive Batman's penis, because no one in the history of the world in DC publications has drawn Batman's penis before, you fucking draw that thing twice, and he drew it once? Come on. If you're going to go for the goal, if you're going to go for broke, fucking go for broke, all right?
Instead of calling it Batman's penis, can we call it the Batawang?
Ah, I was looking for something like that. That would have been the episode title, the Batawang Edition. That would be a good episode title. No, the absurd thing about this, and I think William's going to talk about this a little bit, but the absurd
William's
going to
talk about the Wang a little bit.
I am the penis expert on the show.
Yes.
We all
have them. We all have them, just to be clear. I would like to think I'm an expert on my own penis. Here's the most absurd thing, right? Besides the fact that this person had the ability, he could draw Batman's penis twice and he doesn't. He draws it once because he's a fucking lazy fuck. They wanted to be so naturalistic to draw Batman's penis that you couldn't even see it. And Zack Snyder had Batman versus Superman and he didn't even show Batman's penis. So that's how ridiculous showing Batman's penis is, that Zack Snyder had the chance to and didn't.
Yeah, I don't know how to respond to that. William, over to you for more Batawang commentary.
Well, I was going to say what penis, but you kind of asked Justin that already. We've all seen Dr. Manhattan's penis, right?
Yes.
That's a penis in Watchmen, in comic books. Yeah, I even dug up, I went to the old Wayback Machine and dug up Dr. Manhattan's penis.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman?
Yeah. And here's what Zack Snyder had to say about putting the penis in the movie. He said, Quote, it was a weird process. We made a wedge, that's a visual effects term. It was done in QuickTime. We would scroll the length up and down, and we wrapped it around a frame. Of course, we were worried about the rating. Yeah, we were still nervous about it. It wasn't so much about taking any inches off. It was more about how many times you get to see him. We have an R rating right now, so they've seen him. Maybe partly because he is CG, they thought it was okay. It was a really practical decision to make it that length. Then we put him in the thong, which is CG. We basically took his outfit from the book. But as in the book, we took it off him because he just lets it go. He certainly lets it all hang out. So there's your Zack Snyder quote for the episode. I believe I get my achievement unlocked for getting a Zack Snyder quote in before Snyder Justin.
Zack Snyder has thought more about Dr. Manhattan's penis than most people have thought about anything. I just want to point out that disparity.
That's a fair point. And also, that's the point. That's the difference between naturalism and romanticism. There was a valid storytelling reason for doing that. Dr. Manhattan was so disconnected from humanity and from having any sort of concern about what other people thought of him that he let it all hang out. Those are the director's words. Whereas, what is the purpose of showing Batman's penis in these frames? There is zero purpose. It's just complete naturalism. It's like, hey, we could show Batman's penis, so let's show Batman's penis. And then we only do it once because we're lazy.
You are really upset with this artist for not drawing two Batawangs.
If you're going to be an asshole, be a fucking asshole. If you're going to just walk up to me and punch me in the face, do it fucking multiple times. If you punch me in the face once and just walk away, I'm going to be like, what was the purpose in that?
But it's going to be really awkward for me next time I hang out with Justin and I don't pull my penis out.
If you do, pull it out twice.
Yeah, if you're going to do it once, you might as well do it twice.
That's what she said. Okay. This is all nuts. Every week, I think couldn't possibly...
I did not see any nuts. I only saw the bare outline of a shaft, so...
I'm just saying, every week I think the culture can't sink to a new low, and yet here we are discussing the naturalism of Batman's penis. So, thanks, culture. Thanks a lot.
This is why I say there will never be peak farce. There will never be peak farce. But fortunately, there are people fighting back. And we will be discussing, as always in our next segment, some naturalism versus romanticism. But we're also going to be discussing more explicitly individualism versus collectivism. As Jonathan Honig joins us in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused. Joining us now is Jonathan Honig, a founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and a regular contributor to and panelist on Fox News. Jonathan recently wrote, and I believe it's out now, or he'll tell us when the publication date is, a new textbook on Americanism. Jonathan, welcome to the Midside.
Great to be with you. I've been a Midsider as a listener for a long time, so you guys to talk about a new textbook of Americanism.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have you. It's great to talk to you again. I don't know if you remember, but I actually met you on the set of Atlas Shrugged Part 2 way back in the day.
Wow. I remember the filming of it, obviously.
Right, the movie, and you were in the wedding scene, right? I believe.
Yes. Yeah. I was a photographer in the wedding scene in Atlas Shrugged. Yes. It was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, I was also in that scene, and I worked on set there because I had won an essay contest. So I got to work directly with the producers, and that's how I got to meet you. So just wanted to say it's great to see you again. You're very passionate about Ayn Rand's ideas, objectivism, and individualism. And that's really what I want to get at here, talking about this. I just want to read a paragraph from the introduction that you shared with us, because this is what really stuck out to me, because this is what I care about personally. This is why I'm drawn to objectivism, and this is what I always want to get across in the mid-side. Although eclipsed by Ayn Rand's mature writings, which are voluminous, Textbook of Americanism is still relevant. The issue it addresses, individualism versus collectivism, confronts us today, 70 years later. A new textbook of Americanism expands Ayn Rand's earlier work. This current book will recalibrate people back to the basic individualistic principles they may have shunned or, more likely, never learned in the first place. And that's something we discuss all the time. The people shunning individualism, people having never learned it in the first place, and that's what excites me about the book. So can you tease us a little bit or tell us some of the directions it goes in and as how it's recalibrating people?
Yeah, I mean, the story of Textbook of Americanism, actually starts back in the 1940s. You know, Ayn Rand, who had come to this country penniless, and barely knowing the language, came here to write, to pursue her dream, to be a success and to create. And by the 1940s, she saw that basically what was happening in America is the same thing that was happening through Europe, was the spread of collectivism and collectivist ideas into the culture. So she joined and was asked to join a group called the Motion Picture Alliance of American Ideals. And these were all the big names of the time. Cary Grant, when he was acting, Clark Gable, Ginger Rogers, a group dedicated to doing just that, preserving Americanism, American ideals. And as part of her contribution, she wrote a series of essays called Textbook of Americanism. And she sketched out 41 total questions to be in part of her series. She only answered 11 of them, and it's an interesting story of why, you know, she actually left the group and never finished them. So having picked this up, and her first question and her first answer is, what is the basic issue in the world today? And it's exactly as what you're saying. She puts forth that the basic issue in the world today, political issue, is individualism versus collectivism. And as you said, and that is still tremendously relevant, I think even more relevant now, because the voices of individualism are so few and far between. And especially in the sphere of politics, I mean, count any prominent voices for real individualism anymore. And I'll quickly just say, you said people have shunned him. I think a lot of older people have shunned them. But, you know, you guys are young, and I talk to younger people. My sense is, you know, from day one, you've been taught altruism. You've been – selfishness has always been bad. It's always been something, you know – so my sense is younger people, and that's really who this is for, you know, they don't know from individualism at all. They've been taught just the opposite. So I want to make this the Communist Manifesto – for young people. They all buy the Communist Manifesto. I want to make this our version of what America really is, to start to change the culture back to what it really is.
That's a super noble goal. I mean, I speak with, in my job, I get to speak with a lot of young people, mostly law students, who have never heard these ideas, never heard of Ayn Rand, never heard, you know, a strong defense of individualism, any more strong than what they would hear in a traditional conservative, quote unquote, defense of it. And what I'm always surprised by is, for instance, when they have the opportunity to hear someone like Yaron Brook speak, that they are just blown away and they immediately want to consume more of this. So I'm glad this is going to be a new resource for them.
Yaron is included in the compilation, and, you know, he stresses, and this fits right in, that, you know, Americanism is not on the left-right spectrum right now.
Yeah.
You know, we are not in the middle or on the right in terms of those terms anymore. You know, today's political right and left are equally collectivist. You know, Americanism is outside that world. We are on our own track, not in the middle of a spectrum, a track that, as you said, in which the individual is the unit of value. And that's, you know, that's what America is. I mean, and you guys know this. I know the audience knows this. I mean, in the history of the world, it was always whatever, name it, the Pope, God, the Fuhrer. And this country is about you. It's about you making the most of your life. So and about the ideas. So revolutionary. You know, Rand got that. So few seem to get it today. And that's what we're trying to change.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about something that's been on my mind a lot lately. We've seen, you know, it's kind of all started in the public sphere with Joe the Plumber and the You Didn't Build This. And now we see a lot across business. It's mostly coming in through the diversity inclusion sort of efforts at different businesses, where we see this creeping tribalism, this creeping attack on meritocracy. How do you see that really? Do you see that pattern as well? And how do you think ideas like individualism can fight that sort of tribalism?
There's, you know, there's a whole essay that written by Amy Peacock on racism. And, you know, Rand made sure to include this as one of her her questions in textbook. She asked the question, why is racial prejudice un-American? And, you know, Amy has a tremendous response how and why it is. And you're right. We're going in, you know, just the opposite direction, more balkanization, more tribalism. Or seeing people by their, you know, skin color or, well, I mean, you name it, as you know. And it's, we're, you know, tribalism is really stressed. It's celebrated now. How many tribes can you be part of, and how much can you identify as being part of that tribe? And, you know, of course, you know, we believe that, you know, America is, you know, is just the opposite. And to see someone as part of an ethnic group or tribe and not their own individual attributes is disgusting. I mean, it is profoundly anti-American. But, you know, both the left and the right now, you know, we think really exemplify this, that tribalism. You know, on the left, it's, I mean, name it, it's ethnic, it's gender, it's all that. But, you know, on the right, there's this nationalistic tribalism. Like, you know, if you buy a Toblerone, you're somehow a bad American. You should have bought a Hershey instead because it was supposedly, you know, made in America. So, again, you're seeing that collectivism on both sides of the aisle. You know, Americanism says you own your own life, you live your own life to pursue your own selfish happiness, not at anyone's expense, of course, trading with them voluntarily along the way, but you know, you're not a servant to the greater good of anyone else in this country.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love all that. So how do you respond to people, Jonathan, who push back and say, no, this country wasn't built on, you know, you making yourself. This country was built on, you know, taking from indigenous people or taking for, via slave labor or, you know, stealing from poor people.
Or Judeo-Christian values, as you often hear on the right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's part of what I think makes this so exciting is that a lot of, you know, Ayn Rand is, it's not inaccessible at all, but it's philosophical. And a lot of people are not philosophical. That's okay. But everyone, what party they're from, no matter where they fall politically, everyone would say that they love this country, that they know what it's about, that they believe in its ideas. And exactly as you said, I mean, already, you know, I'm kind of getting into it with many people on Twitter who say, what are you talking about? This country is based on Judeo-Christian values. The founders were Christians, and that's in part of everything we do. And then many, you know, in other political stripes say this is country is all about helping your neighbor, sacrifice for the greater good. So, you know, and individualism is on the outside. You know, individualism is the radical idea. And, you know, that's what I hope to do is have people once again kind of cheering and realizing that, you know, you don't owe your neighbor in this country. You know, you have your own life. You live your own life. And that's what really makes it unique. But there is a lot of pushback because, as you said, I mean, conceptions of what the country is have been pounded into us from a very early age.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been put from a very early age by having people not think. And I mean, I'm not surprised you're getting all the pushback. And it's tough to hear because it's like you said, people don't even look at the founding documents to know what they say, to know that they mean individualism. Something that interests me about what you've been saying is you mentioned that there were originally, I believe you said, 31 questions that she wrote, but she only answered 11.
Actually, no, there was originally that 41 questions.
40. Okay. So it's just my math is terrible. So that means there's 30. Give us some of your favorites of the unanswered that you guys seek to answer in this new version, this new textbook, like maybe two or three of your favorites.
Sure. Well, I'll that are my favorites. One is probably Stuart Hayashi's. Ayn Rand back in the 40s asked, how do you recognize a Nazi? She was going to ask, how should you recognize a Nazi?
Well, that's just someone you should punch. I thought that's how you knew what a Nazi was.
If you want to punch them, they are
yeah,
a Nazi.
Yeah, that's what I
or
the rule
if
was
they
nowadays.
Were punched by social justice warrior, therefore they're a Nazi.
Yeah, that's what I thought the rule was.
I heard that episode, actually, and laughed quite a bit at it. Well, you know, so Stuart, you know, has and to talk specifically about the alt-right, you know, which is a really viable and prominent movement that has really grown in just the last couple of, that's quite interesting. You know, Harry Binswanger talks a lot about economic freedom and why Buy American is un-American, which is pretty important. You know, my contribution is about, you know, even many on the right think, you know, the rich, they've made a lot of money, they can afford. In fact, the super rich did not get a tax cut, ironically or interestingly, I suppose. So, you know, my contribution is making the point of, you know, you did earn that. It's yours, and the government has no right to take it. It's immoral for them to take it. And Americanism puts forth that you have the right to bequeath it to anyone else. You know, we're not. The example I give, you know, you give a wristwatch to somebody, it's theirs. The moment you give it to them, it's theirs. And government doesn't come in and say, well, wait a minute, well, part of that is ours. So it's all tackled. And the best part is that whole section of unreleased, never before read work from Ayn Rand that was transcribed from audio recordings she made in the 1970s, talking about stuff like, you know, can you secede from, is there a right to secede? You know, do we lose the right to defend ourselves when we're in society? Interesting political issues that have never before been seen. So that's all in a new textbook of Americanism.
That's exciting. New unpublished Ayn Rand material. I didn't even know about that. That's cool. Well, where is this available and is it out already?
Soft cover and PDF now, and it will be, it's on textbookofamericanism.com and Amazon. And the Kindle and audio are forthcoming, so look for those in the next 2 weeks.
Awesome.
Americanism.com.
Definitely. And if people want to ask you questions, Jonathan, you're on Twitter, right? What's your Twitter handle so people can shoot questions to you? There you go. Easy enough.
And we'll, of course, get the links up on themidside.com for this episode. So if you guys want to check it out, click through and buy the book.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Definitely. I mean, this is, like I said, this is right in the sweet spot of what is super important to me personally. And that's why I made Welcome to the Midside to get this whole individualism idea out there, because I just love people who are individuals. Even, I mean, we're talking on a political level, but to me, even on an interpersonal psychological level, individualism is so important. And I think the effects we see of everything becoming so collectivized and so tribal is it just becomes so difficult to even find people to appreciate on that one-on-one interpersonal level.
And I have to say, I think people honestly don't even know what the term is. I was on Fox the other day with someone talking about individualism, and his response was, well, you know, we're all too individualistic because we're on our phones all the time. That's not what individualism is. You know, Rand talks about an individualist is someone who says, in effect, you know, I won't sacrifice myself for them, and don't expect them to sacrifice themselves for me. basic fundamental issues. You know, it's not about, as she says, you know, do you help your neighbor? Do you give them charity? You know, Don Watkins has a tremendous essay about they have no right to charity. There is no right to, you know, pick your neighbor's pockets in this country. It's tremendous good stuff in there.
And if you're in the audience right now wondering if this book is for you, I challenge you to go look at the endorsements for this book on Amazon. One by Brad Thor. He says it's the definitive case for American exceptionalism. And the other by Rucka Rucka Ali, friend of the show, says, to understand America, read this book. And I argue that every single human being in America falls between Brad Thor and Rucka Rucka Ali. So this book is for you. Yes. That is a spectrum right there.
They put Daniel's quote on the cover. That's a cover or back cover based review there, Jonathan, I think.
For sure. I will be adding it, and I appreciate that support. And you guys, you have a lot of influence. And as I said, I mean, this, you know, when I was in school and went to school, like Communist Manifesto, it was kind of the cool thing to say that you were interested in ideas and you were kind of challenging. And I don't know what it is now. Maybe it's Chomsky or something. But, you know, I want to be this to be that for, you know, young people, but for anyone, you know, to kind of reacquaint themselves, as you said, with, you know, what's Americanism all about? I mean, and so it's accessible, it's indexed, you can get through it. It's essays, like a lot of Rand-oriented anthologies, and, you know, use it as a resource to start to reclaim that term. For what it really is.
Well, I think nowadays it's just Kim Kardashian's Instagram stories. I think that's what it is. All right. So as William said, the link is going to be up on the website. And as you heard, you can follow Jonathan, reach out to him on Twitter. Textbookofamericanism.com is the link to buy this the book currently. But for now, we're going to head on to some mid-side business. And Jonathan's going to join us here. Also on the website is all of the trailers every week that we're going to discuss in Trailer Takedown. So if you want to look at what the trailers are going to be before the episode starts, you can just go to themidside.com/podcast, or you can pause it as we go through all of these in each one and alternate and make sure all of the stupid things I'm saying are actually accurate or not, or if Daniel doesn't call me out on it like he always does.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Captain Marvel is the first post-Infinity War Marvel movie. In it, Brie Larson plays a female superhero who comes to Earth, magically appears. It's not really clear. It's a prequel. It's set in the 90s, I believe, because Samuel L. Jackson has more hair. And she's
and
trying
two
to
eyes.
Remember.
And two eyes.
Two eyes. Sorry, I forgot about that. I forgot about that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
And they land in a Blockbuster video.
So she's
my first thought before I knew this was a prequel was, is that the last remaining Blockbuster video? If so, tough luck for them.
They actually still have them in Alaska. They actually still have them in Alaska.
They would.
Yeah, no, that was my thought too when I saw it. I was like, that's how they established this is the 90s? That's the only thing. It's just, if there's a, people will know if there's a Blockbuster video that this is the 90s.
Clearly.
Yeah, so she's trying to remember who she is or the past or blah, blah, blah. And somehow she's going to become powerful enough to stop Thanos. That's what's going to happen here. For me, everyone knows how I feel about Marvel, what I think about them. And this is just another example of a Marvel movie. I see nothing special about this. And in fact, this points me to exactly what's wrong with Marvel and comic books from a storytelling standpoint. I've always had trouble with comic books because it's like drugs, where there's always a cliffhanger and they're like, to be continued. And the arcs never have an end, and there's never a definitive end to anything, which is how you can tell a good story. Just like life has an end makes it valuable, a story having an end makes it valuable. And thematically, that's how you can tell a good theme. You can go into it because there's a definitive endpoint. We figured out how Marvel is going to get their out to keep going and keep selling their movie version of crack. There's just nothing that appeals to me about this. Brie Larson, compare Brie Larson to Gal Gadot, right? I don't want to sit here and shill for DC because you know I have my problems with DC. But if you're going to compare that, Brie Larson does not compare on any level to Gal Gadot as far as a female superhero. So for me, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
And on these, let's let our guest go before Daniel and William. Jonathan?
I have to say, you took the words right out of my mouth. I kept wanting to like Brie Larson more. She's beautiful. But the trailer was boring. And that's, you figure if the trailer's boring, then the film is probably going to be boring as well. I don't love superhero movies to begin with. And I would skip.
So say tackle.
Tackle it.
Tackle.
Daniel.
All right. Is it enough that I really love the Captain Marvel typography? Like the typeface? Like, is that enough to see
you
the
always
movie?
Find something good, Daniel, in every preview.
They have a really nice typeface. It's excellent. It's really well done. But other than that, wow. Yeah, I couldn't be less excited for a superhero movie, which is saying something. Tackle.
Yeah, this is a movie that could focus on introducing a new character, could show us more of Nick Fury. I almost said Nick Cage there. That's not right.
No, less Nick Cage.
More of Fury and Agent Coulson in their prime. But the preview focuses, they tried to make this Wonder Woman, and Brie Larson cannot pull that off. The presence is not there. And also, this is a character that most people are not familiar with. I'm not very familiar with. And keeping it, I don't know what this character is. And I think that if this was a mystery movie, you know, like discovering this character, this preview kind of missed that mark. There was nothing tantalizing to hold on to other than she's an outsider and confused. So I'm going to tackle.
When are they going to remake Shazam? That's what we should only wait for. Yeah, but they're going to do it with The Rock.
Oh, no. That's the, isn't...
It's called Shazam.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, how dare you? Don't question me.
That's the Zachary Levi movie, isn't it?
I don't know who that is.
The one we already saw the trailer with that where the young kid becomes the superhero, that's not Shazam?
Yes. What?
Yeah, never mind. We'll talk about this later.
Good pod. Next trailer.
Second trailer.
Apostle is a Netflix original movie. And if you can watch this trailer, Midsiders, and figure out what's going on, can you please tell me? Because as far as I can tell, there's an island where there are crazy religious people who torture people, and it's a horror movie. I couldn't really get much sense of a plot other than that. I do like the idea on a thematic level of just showing that religion is absolutely fucking nuts and how these people are suffering because of it. I like that. But that can't, like, that's not enough to drive me to watch a story of religious people torturing people. If I wanted to see that, I would just go to church. Tackle. Jonathan?
Wow.
Oh, cool. There's some great documentaries about, like, you know, religious and mystic, you know, Bible camps and stuff like that to see the real thing. This trailer is just dark, just dreary. I just don't. You know, it's funny because Netflix has been going on this production binge lately. You know, that they've been such a growth. Their stock has just been up hundreds and hundreds of percent. And when I see the type of work that they're producing, I think, you know, it's time to sell that or sell it short, because this, you know, this is big budget and it just looks terrible. So it's like they got more money than they have ability to make good films now. So I would tackle Apostle.
Tackle.
I love how we got investment advice thrown in there. What do you mean with that? There's your yeah. free advice, yeah. Midsiders. You're welcome. Go ahead, Daniel.
I think the production pitch for this was, what if The Scarlet Letter was directed by Hostel's Eli Roth? And that is a hard tackle for me.
Tackle.
Yeah, I don't like these kinds of movies. I've watched too much real-life stuff due to my work years ago, and I get no entertainment value out of any of this sort of torture porn sort of element. It was hard enough for me to read Better Angels of Our Nature when he describes in that book all the stuff that happened in medieval times. It was hard enough for me to get through that part. I'm going to tackle.
Tackle. Final trailer.
The Twilight Zone reboot trailer was honestly put in as an agenda by me. It's not really a trailer. It's a teaser that's telling us all, hey, guess what? The Twilight Zone is now being run by Get Out's Jordan Peele. So all of us can tackle this, and I'll give you all a moment to rant and tackle. But I just wanted to rant about this, okay? First of all, the fact that fucking it'll say Academy Award winner Jordan Peele for the rest of my fucking life breaks my heart, okay? And second of all, the fact that they watched Get Out and they were like, you know what? That reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode. We should put him in charge of the Twilight Zone because blah, 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 and diversity. I have ranted about Get Out before. It is like a childish, retarded episode of the Twilight Zone. Okay? When I told you guys the twist, Daniel, remember how bad the twist is? They're literally transplanting white people's brains into black people's bodies to appropriate black people. That is absolutely stupid. And now this guy is in charge of the Twilight Zone. One of the greatest romantic works of art in American history. First, we changed the Tower of Terror in Disneyland to Guardians of the Galaxy. Now we're putting Jordan Peele in charge of the Twilight Zone. I could not tackle anything harder in my entire life.
Tackle.
Jonathan?
I'm just fascinated that you are such a fan of the Twilight Zone because the only Twilight Zone I ever saw was actually on Leonard Peikoff's recommendation. You've probably seen the episode. It's an episode called, is it? If not, run and get it. I mean, again, I saw it just because of Peikoff's recommendation. And he said it's the most philosophical piece of television he's ever saw. Now, it's going to be tough to beat that, but I'll have to, you know, I won't sample the new one, but you know, hats off, they're trying to make something of that old intellectual property, I suppose. Don't tackle, don't worry.
All right, good.
It's like, wait a minute. I was going to say, this take back the endorsement.
But yeah, this is episode put in the can. This is the never seen ever episode till we die. Daniel?
So the way you feel about Jordan Peele and Academy Award winner is the way I feel every 4th of July when I have to listen to Katy Perry's Firework.
Hey, you stole that joke from me.
Yes,
from
I know.
Years ago when we were at OCON and I was standing there going, we're going to have to hear this every year for the rest of our lives.
I brought this up to give you objectivist street cred so that they know you've been to OCON many, many, many years. Yeah. Okay. So as far as I'm concerned, The Twilight Zone has already been rebooted in Black Mirror. And they have done a better job than anything I can anticipate would happen under Jordan Peele's watch. Now, he is the host of this. Does it mean that he is the head writer on this? I think so. And if so, the show is screwed. But if not, if they're going to allow some other people to do some writing, then I'm interested in the concept. But as Jonathan said, don't worry, tackle.
Tackle.
Oh, man, do I hate CBS All Access. What they've done to Star Trek with STD, it's infected all of sci-fi. It's destroyed a franchise. Here's the next franchise they're willing to destroy, to sacrifice at the altar of trying to fight Netflix. Hell to the no. Tackle.
Tackle.
Look, Daniel, even if he is just hosting the intro, can't we just take Forrest Whitaker's Outer Limits intro and put it on? And say that's, I'd rather that if we need a black guy to narrate. What's wrong with that? That's how offensive Get Out was. And I don't mean it's offensive because of the racial point they're trying to make. I mean it's offensive because of how bad it was.
Best original screenplay. So we all tackled all of these, which means we all have to watch one of them. So Justin, which one are you watching?
You know I can at least sit through a Marvel movie, so I would sit through Captain Marvel. Because, look, as I've said before, Marvel is like the McDonald's of movies now. You go and you eat it, and you're like, okay, you know, that tasted good. Like I got my fix.
You watch 6 or 7, and you come out with heart disease.
Exactly, and then you realize after you've watched the movie, what you really want to do is watch another movie like an hour later because you're not actually satisfied. That's what Marvel movies are like. So, you know, I'll go to McDonald's every few months. I'll see a Marvel movie.
Jonathan, if you had to watch one, which would it be?
I'm guessing The Twilight Zone might be the shortest.
There you go.
I like it.
I'll go for that.
Yeah, I'm going with the Captain Marvel as well, because again, I could just eat that typography up and then close my eyes and take a little snooze for the rest of it. But William?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Captain Marvel as well, just because I might get some Coulson Fury stuff. Nothing else looks any remotely
interesting. Are you trying to turn this into a slash film in your slash fiction in your head?
No, 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 no. I don't mean Bert and Ernie style. I mean I mean actual content and backstory.
I think Bree's really pretty, but she doesn't have that commanding presence of Gal Gadot. You're exactly right.
Yeah, there's no way we can turn this into a good hero movie. So, but if I had to watch one, it'll be that one.
All right, so that was a depressing trailer takedown, but I think we can turn this episode around and we'll do one of our common segments pretty well. It's time for another round of finally Walker Joe.
Gentlemen, welcome to the game show, Woke or Joke, where you have to determine if these actual headlines are from social justice websites or are satire. So what happens is I will read three headlines, and then I will ask each of you to choose if one of them is a joke, or you have the option of saying that none of them are jokes, and they are all, in fact, woke. And you'll be awarded prizes. This is also a game show I can win, because if you're all wrong, I get a point, which is fun. So, gentlemen, are you ready to play Woke or Joke?
I am ready.
Awesome.
Only William
Round
is ready,
one.
Apparently.
Only William is ready, which is fine with me. Round one, WTF stuff. Decided to open it up with a little bit of postmodern headlines here that no one knows what the hell's going on. So, headline number one. Local Nobel Prize nominee arrested for child sex abuse. One more time. Local Nobel Prize nominee arrested for child sex abuse. Headline number two. Oh God, a woman found a dead tortoise in her vagina. Headline number two, one more time. Oh, God. A woman found a dead tortoise in her vagina. And headline number three. NASA receives $30 million grant to study effects of rover on Mars climate. Headline number three. NASA receives $30 million grant to study effects of rover on Mars climate.
Did you say
Justin.
Rover or Grover?
Only Super Grover can get to Mars, Justin. So clearly I said rover. Thank you.
Jonathan can go first. Since he's the guest, I'll let him go first this round.
Jonathan, woke or joke?
Last one is the joke.
All right. Justin, woke or joke?
I'm actually going to disagree. Okay. So that one, that I can see them totally fucking doing that to try and get us to not go to Mars. Oh, we can't do that. We're going to destroy the climate on Mars. The first one, what was the first one again?
Local Nobel Prize nominee arrested for child sex abuse.
All right. Yeah. In today's day and age, I'd be more surprised if the local Nobel Prize nominee wasn't arrested for child sexual abuse. So that one has to be true. So I'm going to say the second one.
Oh, God, a woman
joke.
Found a dead tortoise in her vagina?
Yeah, it has to be. Unless she was, like, cosplaying as April O'Neil or something.
Wow. Thank you. Horrible, horrible image.
Yeah, these are all three so good. The first one, I think... Oh, it's so hard. The first one, I think, is woke, because anyone can nominate anyone for a Nobel Prize. So I think that's, you know, that could be just a crazy person that nominated himself or something, right? Then let's see. I don't know anything about vaginas, so I'm going to say the second one is the joke.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Jonathan off to a commanding lead.
Dang.
For correctly identifying the third headline as the joke. I thought the local in the first headline might be the funny part of it. Local Nobel Prize.
Local
nominee.
Nobel
I don't know
Prize.
Why I found
yeah,
that
yeah.
Particularly funny.
Is it that he's a local or that it was the local Nobel Prize? I didn't know there were like regional like Nobel Prizes that were given out.
It's like a daytime Emmy, right? It's just not as good.
Wait, why are we focusing on that? A woman, they found a tortoise in her vagina, and we're focusing on the local, the adjective local?
That is a real story about a woman in Spain. You can go read that. We'll have all these links.
Was it on BuzzFeed? Please tell me that was a BuzzFeed.
No, it was on thecut.com, which is a new
the new BuzzFeed.
I'm always, okay. I have to go further and further away from
deeper
the mainstream.
Deeper into the dark
woke
web.
Because you people are ridiculous on our Midsider Discord. You send me all these articles and it just destroys my woke or joke queue. So I have to go deeper and deeper into the woke territory.
If you could send him all of it in our Discord, if you could put just constantly link to thehardtimes.net so I can start reading that site, because I do not read that site and it's like my spirit animal and it destroys me that I can't read it.
So first I want to thank Midsider Elia for submitting the first headline as a possibility. And then the joke headline was actually written by Midsider Conrad. So we really appreciate that, Midsider. It didn't fool everyone this round, so you don't win anything except our respect. Okay, round two.
He fooled me, so he wins the fuck you.
Round two, race stuff. Headline number one. LeBron James not bothered when Donald Trump calls him dumb. One more time. LeBron James not bothered when Donald Trump calls him dumb. Headline number two. It's impossible to be racist to white people, but here's our best shot. Headline number two, one more time. It's impossible to be racist to white people, but here's our best shot. And headline number three. Beyonce's former drummer accuses her of extreme witchcraft. One more time. Beyonce's former drummer accuses her of extreme witchcraft.
Extreme.
Justin, woke or joke?
Hey, Christine, did Beyonce's former drummer...
That is cheating.
No help from the...
Beyonce Jay-Z show last night.
No help from the peanut sauce gallery.
What is the point of having a girlfriend who goes to the Beyonce concert? So I think it was the second one is the joke. What was
Hold
the second
on.
One?
I thought Jonathan got to go first.
We have to switch every round. Like it's
yeah.
A round.
Oh,
round.
Okay.
So the second one was, it's impossible to be racist to white people, but here's our best shot.
Ah, no, never mind. I don't know. Here's the thing. I want that to be the joke because if somebody wrote that as a joke, that's a fucking brilliant satire headline. So you know what? The artist in me is going to say that's the joke because I want that to be a joke because someone is a fucking genius if they made that a joke. So I'm going with that as the joke.
All right. William, woke or joke?
I'm saying they're all woke. In a controversial hot take, they're all woke.
Hot take, all woke. All right. Jonathan?
I concur. I think they're all woke.
Ooh, man. Here we go.
Wow. All right.
Justin, what is real?
Prepare to be in love with thehardtimes.net because number two is a joke.
I told you. I want to find those people and be their best friend. Love me.
They are Justin's spirit animal. So after two rounds, Jonathan and Justin are tied with one, and William and I are tied with zero.
Oppression.
Going into
oppression.
This show, but do they have like merch I can buy?
They probably do have merch you could buy.
You
probably get framed articles.
Can you link me directly to the merch so I don't get woke or joke spoiled for me?
Yes, I will. And sometimes I send Justin hard times on articles that I'm not using. So this week I sent him one that said, a straight edge kid trolls AA group by going in and having 10,000 days of sobriety. I thought he would really like that.
I did. And the best part was the like final quote. Like, I think I copied and pasted the final quote to you, didn't I? Yeah. People always tell me that I'm missing out on something, Jackson said after the meeting. I'm constantly hearing about how much more fun drinkers have. I admit I was curious, but it turns out these people are no fun at all. That's my entire life. Like, that just described college and undergrad and grad school for me. Like, that's brilliant. I love this website. Marry me, hardtimes.net.
right. Round three is gender stuff. Gender and sexuality stuff, I should say. Sorry. Gender and sexuality stuff. Here we go. Final round. Woke or joke. Headline number one. What I learned on my date with a sex robot. One more time. What I learned on my date with a sex robot.
Let's just ask a quick question. If yes. What if you made it up, but it very well could have been a real headline that someone
knows. If you can Google it while we're recording and send it to us and prove it, we'll throw out the round.
Sounds like an epistemology problem. Yeah. What does this actually refer to in reality? Okay. Headline number two. I'm a gay dad, and I want my son to know Bert and Ernie of Sesame Street as a couple. One more time. I'm a gay dad, and I want my son to know Bert and Ernie of Sesame Street as a couple. And number three. Actress explains why her kids think Ellen DeGeneres is their real mother. One more time. Actress explains why her kids think Ellen DeGeneres is their real mother. William, woke or joke?
Oh, man. Ugh. I gotta go with all woke again in a Hail Mary.
Hail Mary, William, all woke. Okay, Jonathan, woke or joke?
I'm gonna take the other side of that trade and go all jokes. I feel like some of these on flip order. These seem a little bit.
That is bold. Bold move from Jonathan. Justin, woke or joke?
Wait, they can all be jokes?
Sure.
Okay. So there will be a victor on this round because I am going to say all woke, which means either Jonathan or I will win. Sorry, William.
Oh, man.
Do I get to take over as the new host of the Midside?
Sure, you'll probably get better ratings as long as I get a cut of Patreon.
All right. Congratulations, Justin. They are all woke.
And me. Hey, I got a point.
William got a point.
That's how you defend this house. And I would like to say I only won because of the hardtimes.net. So thank you, hardtimes.net. You can find my contact information on the website, or you can just reach me on any of the social media platforms, thehardtimes.net. I love you.
We didn't get to use our tiebreaker for this week, but I think you would have known its status. I just wanted to include this article. The tiebreaker for this week was this title, which is Report. Trump's penis looks like Toad from Mario Kart.
That is definitely woke.
And that is 100% woke. So, all right, thanks everyone for playing Woke or Joke, the game show where you get to decide if it's satire or social justice. Until next time, stay woke or not.
Jonathan, thank you for playing. Thank you for participating in Trailer Takedown, and thank you for coming on the show. It has been an absolute pleasure. We love you here in the Midside, and we know Midsiders love you.
Thank you, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. I am a listener. Count me as one, and always enjoy it every week. So thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. And how about you plug the new textbook of Americanism one more time?
Patreon as well. So I'm happy to support you that way. The new book is Textbook of Americanism, or A New Textbook of Americanism. And the website is textbookofamericanism.com.
Thanks, Jonathan. Pick up a copy. Thanks.
All right, gentlemen. Let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that basically only William can have a career after this episode, so it was nice knowing you all, and I'll be on government handouts soon. On the dole!
William?
I learned so much about Batman's penis that I'm not sure what I'm going to do with myself.
Are you? I think I know what you're going to do with yourself.
Oh.
Justin, what did you learn?
What did you learn?
I learned that apparently Beyonce is a witch, which explains so much. It just everything suddenly makes sense now.
Yeah, it does explain a lot, but not her fabulous hair. All right, so if you learned something this week, why don't you tell us on all the social medias at The Midside? That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Vero, anywhere where Zack Snyder can be found, we too can be found. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes of the show, going way back, including the Snyder series and the Nolan Notes series, and all of our special episodes as well. And you can also relive this episode with Jonathan Hodig over and over and over and over and over again. While you're there, click over to themidside.com/store and pick up a shirt. False Dichotomy Bro, Hail Snydra, the classic logo shirt, of course, the classic logo. It's basically an icon now, much like the Golden Arches or Coca-Cola. And go to iTunes or Google Play to subscribe if you haven't already done that, and you can get this show delivered to the device of your choice the moment Justin hits publish on Midside Mondays. While you're there, give us 5 stars. 5 stars help us go to the roof of the ratings. We surpass things like Welcome to Night Vale, which is some sort of crap radio show which no one wants to listen to. And leave us a little review, whether you like us or not. 5 stars. We hate you. You're terrible. 5 stars. Something like that. Themidside.com/Patreon, though, or patreon.com/themidside, is where you can help us financially. So this show costs money to put on. We have hosting, we have advertising, we have equipment fees, website stuff, etc. And you can choose to help us out by giving us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. So not when we take time off, like if we all were as lazy as I was the last 2 weeks, then we wouldn't pay anything. But when we do produce content, you agree to give us like $1 or $2 or $5 or whatever you can afford. That helps us keep the lights on. And I need lights with this new child, especially like 5 a.m. when he wakes up. It's awesome. Turn all the lights on. So if you can't afford that, that's fine. You can always tell a friend, because telling a friend helps us more than anything in the entire universe. Yes. Why is that? Because the more people listen to The Midside, the more rational people there will be in the world. And the less we have to do this. That's right. That's the goal of the show, to stop having to do it. If all of you become rational, we won't have to do this anymore. Because all the farce will go away. It will evaporate into the ether.
I was going to say, it's we can't do it anymore if there's no more
that's
farce.
That's right. That's right. And we can all retire. We can retire to Bermuda or someplace. Bahamas.
Orlando.
Come on, pretty mamas. Yeah. So that'll be fun. And thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
All right, no Instagram stories. I can hear them, which means the mic can hear them.